Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 134 with Ashley Michikay on creating your business continuity plan long before it's necessary. Do you own real estate right now, or a non-real estate related business, or have some other investments or bank accounts? Have you ever thought about the plan, thought through the plan for how the assets would be handled in the event of demise? I recently put together my own plan on how my family would handle such a situation. And let me be honest, this was not a comfortable topic to think about, talk about at all for me personally, to kind of, you know, face the fact that, yes, someday I'm going to die and someday my family or heirs will have to sort out that situation. I'd prefer that I am going to live forever. But once that process was done, I felt much better about my situation, knowing that I was prepared if, you know, the proverbial bus comes down and hits me. So I invited Ashley onto the show to discuss exactly that process. Ashley is the CEO of True North Retirement Advisors. She's actually an independent financial advisory firm with a focus specifically on exit plans for business owners. So we're going to talk today about how and why an exit plan should be prepared by business owners or anyone with assets long before it's needed. Let's jump right in. All right. Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. Ashley, how are you doing today?
Good, Dan. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. And so for our listeners, this is an episode that's a little bit in a different direction than where we normally go. Ashley and I were talking offline previously about kind of my succession plan, if you will, and viewing my business, you know, as an asset and how I would deal with this or how I would be prepared for this if I were to pass away and kind of, you know, see that I'm protected or had some foresight there. And we're going to touch on some other things, but because that small little difference and we're not really going to talk specifically about real estate investing, I want everybody to stay tuned, grab the pen and pad. There's pertinent information coming down the pike, but you've been forewarned. So Ashley, would you mind just sharing with listeners a little bit about who you are, how you got to where you're at today, and maybe just a quick little brief synopsis of what your business is right now?
Sure. So I'm the CEO of True North Retirement Advisors, and I co-own the business with my dad. So we launched our firm after working at a couple of big firms together for over a decade. We launched our firm back in 2017, and we moved out of the big firm environment and were crazy enough to start our own business because we really wanted to work with our clients in a way that was a bit more consistent with what we really wanted to be doing for them and the value we wanted to provide, which is geared more towards helping them exit their business. And so more and more over the years, we've kind of accumulated clients who are business owners and found that they have some pretty unique and special needs that go way beyond just timing their Social Security and deciding when they want to retire. So it's a whole other can of worms. And so today what we do is we specialize in creating and implementing exit plans for our clients, helping them make that transition into the next phase of their life. And there's a lot that we do around that, but that's kind of the core that we do.
Cool. And so we have a lot of different types of business owners that tune into our show. But our reason for collecting here on the REI Diamond Show is real estate investing. And so a lot of us are going to be strictly ownership of real estate oriented businesses. Mm-hmm. As an example, I can, you know, think of specific examples where, you know, brokers who have agents are tuning in. I know there's a lot of agents who have their fix and flip business and they're collecting rental properties that are tuning in. separate from real estate. I know we have people who have funded my deals and who are kind of more on the passive side of real estate, but also have their own practices as doctors and dentists. And we have other professionals who, I don't want to call them spectators of real estate, but real estate is more of like an investment portfolio for them rather than a business. So we kind of have two buckets, Ashley. Okay. We have the bucket of like real estate only people like myself, for the most part. And then we have like the professionals who probably would have other businesses, as well. So that kind of maybe paints the picture of who we have here. What would you say would be maybe the horror story of not planning this session, not even thinking about it until it's too late? I mean, if someone hasn't thought about their business and thought about an exit strategy and exit plan, I mean, what's the worst that's going to happen?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of I've seen a handful of cases where it was catastrophic, or, you know, business owner would literally just put the key in the lock one last time and walk away with nothing. Now, fortunately for a lot of your listeners who have real estate as part of the portfolio, as part of the business, that's not as likely to happen, which is fortunate. But I had a situation, and actually what was the catalyst for even focusing on this area in our practice was back in 2013. At that point, we had worked with quite a few business owners, but not really focusing on the exit planning piece of it. And at that time, I was mostly doing 401k consulting for our small business owner clients. And I got a call one day because the 50-something-year-old business owner of this manufacturing business that was a client of mine, he died suddenly of a heart attack. And it was a third-generation family business. And I watched from the sidelines over the next couple of years as things slowly deteriorated. So there were employees that had left. Eventually, about 2 years later, they sold for pennies on the dollar to a firm on the complete opposite side of the country, and who very quickly eliminated everybody else who had not already quit. And in the interim, the grieving wife of this husband who had passed away, her husband, she had no experience in business. I think she was a retired school teacher. And she had to come in and run the business, and she did the best job that she could. But it was just a very difficult situation to watch. And it could have, a lot of the problems that happened as a result of him dying unexpectedly could have been prevented had they done some more to plan for that catastrophic event. Now, I will say most business owners, they're going to not die suddenly like that. They're going to have a bit more control and a bit more time and a bit more say-so about how and when they exit their business. But planning for that and making sure that you're protecting your family and you're setting up your estate and you're protecting your business, like who's going to manage this? Who's going to run it if you can no longer do it yourself? So those are all important pieces of a good exit plan, regardless of the type of business.
So before I share what I'm trying to do, can you maybe just shed some light? If you had stepped in, let's say, 3 years before this this catastrophe where the wife had to step in and suddenly the husband passes early, and not only is she dealing with having just lost a husband, now she has to take the reins of this runaway train here, this wild horse, and try to, like, figure out what's going on with the business. And, you know, she probably did the best she could do, but had you stepped on the scene in that situation, let's say 3 years earlier, what would the conversation have looked like with the gentleman who passed, in which pieces you would have put together for this type of exit plan?
Yeah, I think what really comes to mind is two things, and one of them is very simple and very easy to put together, and that is a business continuity plan. So it sounds kind of fancy, but all it is, it's a written down, and it's a guided thing, so you kind of fill in the blanks, and you say, if this happens, then call this person. So it would list, you know, where all of your assets are. So in a real estate business, it could list all of the properties. And so it takes inventory of everything that you have. Because a lot of times business owners, especially when you're kind of running things, we tend to hold a lot of things very close to the vest. And also spouses have varying degrees of understanding of the business, of the investment holdings. And so your spouse may not even know who your CPA is. They may not even know who your advisor is or your attorney or what your estate plan says. So it's very comforting and can mitigate a lot of problems that can come up just by having a plan in place and having a document that says, here's who you call, here's who, and you also list, like, here's who I want the business to run the business in my absence. So that would be one way where the spouse would have a little bit more direction as far as what needs to happen, where everything is located, who she can lean on, who she can call in that circumstance when she's really kind of just flying blind. And it's made worse because her grief and shock over the situation of her husband dying very suddenly. So we want to do as much as possible to make a transition smooth if something unexpected happens, and a business continuity plan that addresses all of these things and a lot more too, but it's just for their business, those are the kinds of things that really come to mind that would have been comforting for the spouse. And then the other thing that comes to mind is the insurance piece. So I find that a lot of business owners are underinsured. You know, so if something happens to them, they don't have, you know, they're not going to have a big payday, which would take the pressure off of having to sell the business at, you know, fire sale prices because I need something. And, you know, I'm going to be living on rice and beans for the rest of my life if I don't sell the business. So it takes a lot of pressure off when you have insurance money that can keep things afloat while you're, you know, maybe looking for a new person to come in and run the company, or while you're trying to train or just keep things afloat in the meantime.
It's a lot of great info. I love the business continuity plan. So I have a horror story that some listeners may have heard me mention on a previous episode, but I grew up, and we didn't grow up, like, my dad had two rental properties and was not setting the world on fire, lost the rental properties in the 90s, and went back to a 9-to-5. But there was another guy in the neighborhood, this older guy, I just knew he had a Mercedes. And I'm like, this guy must be doing things right. When I was a little older, I tried to rent an apartment from him. And he had, you know, I found out he had, like, when I went to his office, he had like 100-plus houses all over the place. And so he became something of a legend before I got into real estate business. And I don't even remember his name is, I'm not going to mention his name just in case somebody were to listen to it later. But what happened was his son had the nickname Silver Spoon. So they'd grown up, you know, dad was successful with the real estate. Money was not an issue for the family while dad was alive. Then I got into the real estate business in 2006, and the dad passed away. And I found, through my own knowledge of the business and watched what was going on, and he, all of a sudden, I don't know how many, what percentage, it was something like 40-50% of the houses that his dad owned, he wasn't capable of managing them. He may not even have known his dad owned the properties. He lost them to tax sales. It was like, you know, there was like shrinkage. You would think these real estate hard assets would be very simple, you know, to operate or to sell at the proper market value. But if a family member wasn't really brought up to speed on that, to me, I look at that story and I do exactly what you just said. I sat down, I wrote, just this year, I sat down, I got the Excel spreadsheet, and I put together what you're calling the business continuity plan. And I got, you know, the name of each mortgage lender is in there, whoever the rep is that I deal with at that bank or that mortgage company. I mean, I got properties in multiple states, so it's like I could only imagine. It's enough for me to try to keep track of, and it's not like hundreds or anything, but it's a lot of, you know, moving parts. And if somebody, you know, my daughter's like 17, if she had to deal with something like that, at that age, that would be a challenge. So it was just putting in the phone numbers of who the property managers are, putting in the phone numbers of which bank it is, how much the payments are, what are the mortgage payments due, so that there's not a foreclosure erupting if something were to happen? Where are the bank accounts held? What are the, the balances? Do they at least know which banks to go to? Who are the names the banks are held in? And I also found somebody who would be kind of a quote unquote real estate advisor, which is somebody that I implicitly trust, a business partner, to make sure that those assets were either sold at the proper price and not fire sale, like you described with that business selling for pennies on the dollar, and or managed properly, at least for some period of time until they could sell them at the right price. And then it's funny that you mentioned it, but the insurance policy was something that I added to the mix just in the last year. For me, it was like a term policy, 20 years. I figure that in 20 years, if I stay on at the trajectory that I am now, I will probably have some other kind of like long-term cash life policy that I would put together between now and then to cover estate taxes. But in the meantime, because I'm in real estate, I feel confident in my ability over the next 20 years to put together a portfolio that has enough proper management, a turnkey plan in place. And, I'm in the process of taking single family houses that I own that go up in value and 1031 exchanging them into like 10 unit buildings and kind of consolidating the portfolio into, larger single properties as opposed to scattered single family houses like that older guy had who passed away and his son lost half of them to tax sales. So I'm doing my best now with this succession plan in mind to put together the business continuity plan, but not only that, to kind of like carve the investment strategy, if you will, right from the beginning, early on, right now, to the point where 20, 30, 40 years from now, if and when that occurs, hopefully a length of time longer rather than sooner. But if that does occur, I'm trying my best to set it up from the beginning so that the family doesn't have that nightmare in addition to the grief, the loss, and everything else that would take place.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Dan. You'd be surprised. Almost nobody does this. Almost nobody has a written down continuity plan where, and that's been communicated like, hey, if something happens to me, go here, get this. It's going to tell you everything you need to know to just keep the lights on. Very few, even, very sophisticated business people who have businesses worth tens of millions of dollars, I've talked, they don't even have this kind of stuff. So the fact that you're doing that, and anybody, whether they're a business owner or not, it should be writing down inventory of everything. I can't tell you how many times I've had clients come to me years after their spouse dies, and they were like selling their house or going through some old stuff, and they found this old insurance policy. And it's like, oh my gosh, that would have been nice. That would have been nice to know about like 10 years ago.
Wow.
So it's, yeah, and especially for people who are married, there's always one spouse. Very rarely do I work with clients where both spouses are like up to speed on everything. Usually one person in the relationship is responsible for the finances and the investing and everything on sort of the business side and investing side. And then the other person just kind of is more hands off and stays out of it. And so it's very rare that you could quiz the spouse, the non-financial spouse, and they would know. You'd be shocked at what they don't know about the finances and the investment holdings of their family.
It's unfair to hear you say, oh, I think that's great and everything, because as I did talk about some of it, I'm like looking at it still, the plan, Ashley, and I'm sure you could relate. Every plan, it just seems so complex, and there's like still, even though I've thought some of it through, let's level with the truth here. It's not fun to think about me dying. It's like not something I even want to, I kind of want to stay in denial about it. And it was like, it was like triggering like depression when I first started getting the life insurance policy. It's like, oh my gosh, this is, but now like I've kind of thought through it, worked through it a little bit. And now it's like, I realistically, I'll come back and maybe like once a month, once every 2 months, I'll update, you know, tenant information on some of those things. And I have it all on one sheet that's shared with, you know, parents and the real estate advisor who would handle my situation if I were to drop dead tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But even with that, I don't want to sound like I have it all together. Like, we're in the middle of, I think, you know, 83 real estate deals. That is my main business. And there's, you know, there's people in charge of each specific market. And like, I just shudder to think of like those people I trust, they're on that, continuity plan, if we're going to call it that. That wasn't what I called it before, but it has a name now. So those people who are in charge of those portions of my business are on those sheets, but it's still going to be such a, it would still be such a confusing thing to see through to the very end without some kind of shrinkage and loss and, you know, things not quite being handled the way I would handle them. So it's just eye opening. And I encourage anyone listening right now, like, if this hasn't been thought through, there's no time like right now to at least start thinking in that way. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and you're right. It's never fun to think about your demise, your inevitable demise. Mine too. All of us, you know, we're all going to die someday, but we all live in denial that that's not going to happen. So, but I bet you feel really good now that you've come out on the other side and you have something, because it's so comforting to know that, like, if something happens to me, things are going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. My family is not going to, you know, lose all of this that I've worked so hard for because I just didn't tell them what to do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as simple as a bank account that could be sitting somewhere that goes dormant, that's listed on that sheet, they would know where to take the paperwork to get answers, you know, yeah, if that were to come. So, all right, cool. So what else would you say is extremely important for somebody who would, you know, consider becoming, let's say, a client of your company? You know, what are the top three things that this person should do, will work on with you, maybe characteristics of the clientele that comes through your door to begin with? I mean, like, what does that look like, Ashley?
Yeah, so I would say most of the clients that we work with, they're probably about 10 years away from wanting to either exit completely or dial back significantly. So, you know, we always ask clients in kind of the early stages, what's your day-to-day involvement like right now, and how do you envision that changing over time? You know, only the rare person among us wants to work and be involved heavily in the day-to-day, you know, when they're 90 years old. However, one of the unique and interesting things about real estate that, you know, most people, I think, appreciate, hopefully, is that it can be very passive as well. So you're not having to, like, you're not in the trenches working every day, or you don't necessarily have to be. But when clients come to us, they're primarily interested in wanting to maximize the value of their business, or if they're not interested in doing that, successfully transitioning it to a key person that they've identified. It might be another family member or an employee of theirs who they've identified as their successor, and they don't want to set that person up to fail. So we work with them to help them do the things necessary to allow, you know, a tax-efficient transfer of the business. And if they're wanting to sell to a third party, to help them maximize the value. So every situation is a little bit different, but there are three universal steps that all of our business owner clients go through. One is we figure out what the value is of their business. And real estate's a big part of that, because even if real estate is not your main business, a lot of business owners, part of their portfolio and part of their plan for retirement is they often will own the property that they do business out of. And so that tends to be a part of their exit strategy as well. So we tend to deal with that piece of it. But valuing your business would be the first step. Then we establish the timeline and the goals for exit, which we've kind of touched on. The continuity plan is sort of part of that We'll talk about, you know, who is best suited to take over. What does that look like? When do you want to exit? Are there family considerations? So that's a pretty involved process that we sit down and we meet, and maybe over a couple of meetings, we'll kind of figure out and flesh out what the timeline and the primary goals are for the business owner. And then the third step is discovering your gap. And what that means is, now that you know the value of the business, you add in all of your other financial resources. So this would be investment properties, other like 401k accounts, stock, bond, portfolio. So you take inventory of all of your financial assets. And we look at, you know, what is the income stream, not only just the dollar value, but what is the income stream that these assets are generating, and is that going to be enough for retirement? And a lot of business owners, they tend to reinvest back into the business continually, which is fine, but we want to make sure that when they exit, they're going to have enough income so that they can transition into the next phase of life. And so if they don't have enough income, if they don't have enough assets to transition, then we have a gap. So then we start getting to work on closing that gap and working on the things that are going to have the most impact in closing that gap. And sometimes it's on the business side, we can do things to grow the value of the business, and other times it's on the personal side. So it just, each client is a little bit different. But I find that those are the three universal steps, and then it kind of diverges there based on what the value of the business is and who the successor is. Those are the two drivers that really determine then where we go after that. But those first three steps are pretty universal to all businesses.
You brought up a really great point there, a lot of great information there, Ashley. You mentioned the tax-efficient transfer. Do you guys work on tax-efficient transfer of real estate as part of your service?
You know, usually we'll work in tandem with the CPA and let their expertise drive a lot of what we do. So we usually what we're involved there is we're trying to communicate with the business owner client to the CPA what the end goal is, and having some conversations about about minimizing taxes, which is different in every circumstance. So typically, like if you were wanting to transfer a business or real estate or some other asset to a family member, you're going to want to do that at the lowest, in the case of a business, you call it the lowest defensible value. So we're trying to transfer the business at a low value to maximize the tax efficiency of that. So we're not paying so much in taxes when we transfer that business. So there are ways to do that. And then there are ways to also ensure that even though you're transitioning this business at a low value, that we're getting paid some way if we still have that gap, if we need to get value out of this rather than just sort of gifting it to, a child.
Do you have an example of maybe how, and you don't have to share like specifics or particulars, but how you guys arrived at, let's say, a lowest defensible value and justified that, that might be interesting and instructive for somebody who is getting ready to make a similar transfer?
Yeah, so a common way that business owners will transition their business value or, you know, their stake in the business to a family member is by gifting stock or gifting ownership of the company. And so one of the ways that you can do that, if the business is worth, let's say if you were to sell it to a third party, you know, maybe it's worth $5 million. But if you can bring in a certified valuation expert, a specialist, a lot of times you can justify a lower value, usually because of marketability or other things. You can justify what's called a lowest defensible value. So you're not transferring and paying taxes or, you know, the gifting doesn't become an issue on $5 million. It's a much lower value than that. And, there are examples where, you know, it's half or even less of what you could sell it at a third party. So definitely would bring in a valuation specialist, because a lot of times if you're gonna transfer it at X, you just can't pull a number out of the sky and say, oh, well, my business is worth $4 when it's worth $4 million. So, you know, you don't want the IRS to come knocking on your door. That's why it's called the lowest defensible value, because you may have to defend what that value is if the IRS comes knocking on your door. And you need a valuation expert who provides a certified valuation for your business in order to do that. But I don't know, you know, I'm not as, on the real estate side is a little bit more outside of my wheelhouse. So I don't know if there's something similar you could do on the real estate side to kind of transfer a property at a very low value and then be able to justify that.
Yeah, I don't know the particulars, and I probably should. That was part of my own curiosity when you mentioned it. It's so important. There's something else you mentioned there earlier, and that was, you know, a business owner's tendency to invest in their own business exclusively because it's where they've found, you know, early on, I know for me, it was all of a sudden, it was magical to make the first profit in my own business. And I see it work. And I know a lot of business owners have felt the same way. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, a plumber and you've gotten the first job as a plumber, or, you know, a real estate investor and you did your first flip, or you're building widgets and the first couple widgets shipped and you got the money back. There's something to be said for, like, wow, I turned, you know, my ideas into a profit. And I was like, really, it was really great return on my money, perhaps. It should be, or you didn't continue the business for the last 5, 10, 15, 30, 40 years, going on and growing the business. In my own business, I've been able to invest in very heavily over the last, 6, 7, 8 years or so. I mean, I've been in the business for like 14 years now, since 2006. It's like 13 and a half. And one thing a mentor of mine told me that I'm going to share right now is, finding some investments that were outside of the business just in case the business hit a wall. And his advice was that every once in a while, Dan, you got to sweep the account and put some of that money into like another asset class that you're comfortable with the investment. Mm-hmm. You're, you know, getting familiar with it, but you don't want to like keep at, you know, like let's say that the business model just breaks down, or, you know, I'm flipping houses and all of a sudden the market changed and I got every penny in there and like, a huge chunk of the profit is swept away. And so one of the things I'm focusing on personally right now, Ashley, is I have about 16 business partners that are involved in Diamond Equity Investments right now. A lot of younger guys, in their 20s. And, you know, I am a huge proponent of like, look, guys, come on. Like, if you had a really good month, a really good quarter, really good year, like, don't spend all the money on vacations. Like, let's put the money away to the side. And me personally right now, I'm trying to construct a chunk of our business, sort of like another bolt-on piece, to make the opportunity for the people on my team to invest in other real estate deals that aren't necessarily in the main pipeline of our business, but as a form of, you know, sweeping the account and having the money go to work passively, for us, for them in, you know, with an eye toward the future, that 30 years out when they've paid them down. And we all know what happens with real estate over the course of time. If it's properly managed, then, you know, you get to that point, like you mentioned, where it's more passive and we're 85, 90 years old, collecting the rents on those properties, as opposed to, you know, if we just kept it all in the business, we would have only the business to sell and there'd be like no backup plan in the event that the economic conditions that supported the initial business model change, which they do. I mean, we've seen, you know, Circuit City and we're watching Sears happen. I mean, these are some like great large companies throughout time. Economic conditions change. I mean, we may not have all of our business models as they are, especially in this digital era that we live in. It's a humongous risk that the business model may not be here 5 years, 10 years from now.
Yeah, well, industries change. I mean, with technology, everyone out there can see how disruptive technology can be, where you have whole industries that are just turned upside down like that. You know, you look at the taxi business as an example. Before Uber and Lyft, it was like, oh, okay. And then now all of a sudden they come along and it's totally changing everything like that, and they didn't even see it coming. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen. But yeah, I think you're right, Dan. It's really hard to convince some clients to diversify. You know, you might have, we're all concentrated in one area typically, and it's usually we're either really concentrated in real estate, we're really concentrated in our business, or we're really concentrated in the stock market. And so those are kind of the three areas I see. And when it's a business, or like especially if you've been successful in, let's say you've been successful in real estate, and I come along and I say, well, you know, you should buy this dividend stock portfolio and it's going to yield 3% a year in income, and you know that income stream is going to grow 10%. A lot of times they're thinking like in the back of your head, like, this is ridiculous. I've been making 20% a year for the last 15 years in my business. Why would I settle for, you know, 8 or 9% growth and a 3% dividend if I can just make more by plowing everything back into my business? So from a return standpoint, it's a challenging conversation, but I think you hit the nail on the head where they're not all going to be moving in tandem. And in order to protect yourself from financial ruin, you have to have at least some diversification.
And I think as a caveat, you know, a little asterisk, if you will, it's, you know, the taxi medallion story that you kind of mentioned, the taxi drivers. I know of a taxi driver, and his plan, if you will, was to buy the medallions here in Chicago. And at one point in time, I think they were up to like close to $200,000 per medallion. And he owned three of those medallions that he worked hard for, got a loan, paid them off, rented out these other medallions to other cab drivers. And he still has the other cabs now, and he's got the rental income, but the rents on those medallions have gone down to like 20, 25% of what they were before Uber. And the valuation of those medallions is somewhere in the $20,000 to $40,000 range. And it may be as low as $10,000 or $15,000. It's obviously it's fluctuating, but there's a great example of, man, if he would have bought, you know, a house, second house, and he would have put it into a handful of stocks, bonds, whatever it is. So the asterisks I have is, I think it's important earlier on rather than later to pay attention to and like and be intentional about some other asset classes. So I personally obviously am in real estate. The business, I spend a lot of time and invest a lot of my time and capital back into the main business, which is house flipping. And then I was being intentional about putting some money in the stock market, not a humongous amount of money, but enough that I would pay attention and just start to get a feel for how that asset class behaves by having real money in the game. It's a totally different story when you have a little bit of money on the table. And that's helped me to develop a better mindset, a more long-term investor's mindset when it comes to my rental properties that I started to be intentional about buying as well a couple of years ago. Because I'm going to be honest, Ashley, and I know a lot of people listening to the podcast are too. You can flip a house and make $35,000, $40,000, $45,000, sometimes much more than that. And then you can buy a rental property and you have to put, let's say, $35,000 or $45,000 down into the property that you're not going to get back. And it's going to like spill off $300 a month for the next however many years until the rents go up and you're paying it down. It's not as exciting as a house flip. Mm-hmm. And I know our audience is saying, yeah, he's right about that. You know, that fat chunk of cash that you get. But the tax efficiencies and the longer term mindset that I've gotten as, you know, let's face it, I'm like almost 40 years old now. It's different than when I was 27, 28 years old with a much shorter time horizon. But I had to like come to an understanding of real estate, rental real estate as an asset class, the same way I do as the stock market as an asset class, the same way I had to learn about and become familiar with my life insurance policy as an asset class, you know, my own home, and the list kind of goes on and on. So like if there are business owners or people who are listening right now to us who haven't diversified and have that like one main thing they're doing everything with, I mean, just try to look around and get some exposure on some other stuff and make sure that you're not, you know, like I could just imagine a how horrible it would be to, like, I don't know, retire, sell a business, and you're 65, 70 years old, and all of a sudden now you're, like, tasked with putting all that money to work in some kind of asset class that's going to behave. Your psychological connection with your money could behave something totally different than it was when it was your business producing those returns. I just think that could be a dangerous place to end up. Are there any other final thoughts maybe on that? Or words of warning that somebody who maybe hasn't diversified or hasn't put together a business continuity plan, is there anything you would share with that person if they were listening right now, Ashley?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you talk about diversifying early. Most of us don't think about, you know, the long game, but I just met with a client today who has a huge gain in one stock, and we can't really sell it because the tax consequences on selling this one position are going to be insane. So she's sort of stuck in this, and it's sort of the same thing in the real estate or any other asset class that you have, because if you decide you want to sell it and you're not going to just 1031 exchange it into something else, if you're not just going to exchange it into something else, then you're just kind of stuck in this. So it is important to diversify early and think about that early as opposed to much, much later when you decide, maybe I want to get out of this now, or maybe I want to diversify a little bit. If you can kind of have your hands in multiple cookie jars at the same time, it really helps mitigate some negative tax consequences or potentially negative tax issues that could come up later on.
Smart. So, Ashley, I guess we normally ask for book recommendations of our guests for people who are like in real estate and experienced or beginning, but I think it would be more pertinent to ask you if you had any, I don't know, a book or two that if somebody wanted to go a little bit of a deeper dive on what we talked about today, that you would recommend they take a look at?
Yeah, there's a really good book by John Brown. He's the guy who pretty much trained me and hundreds of other people on the exit path. And I wish I could remember. Oh, I got to pull it up on my computer here. I forget the name of the book, but it's a book geared towards business owners on exiting their business. And it's very well done. It helps them think through all the things in order that they need to think about to exit their business successfully. And it's written in a way that isn't going to bore you or put you to sleep. And there's a lot of great stories and case studies. And so that's a book that I highly recommend. It's called Exit Planning, The Definitive Guide. So that's definitely a book that I recommend. And he's like the guru when it comes to exit planning. He used to be an attorney, and he's been doing this now for, gosh, probably 40 years or something like that. So his book is definitely one that I would check out.
So I'm looking at it on Kindle. You can get it for $9.95, but if you want the printed version, it's going to be $1,999 for a used copy.
That is so weird. I've seen that on Amazon before. I tried to buy my kids a trampoline like 6 months ago, and there was something funky going on because it was going to cost, it was just a little, like, you know, one of those exercise ones. It's about 3 feet in diameter. And it was the only one for sale, and it was like $800. And I'm like, oh, I'll come back next week. Yeah, I know you can buy it off there.
Amazon products, huh? Trying to take advantage of the situation.
Yeah, it's a different kind of flip, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. Not one I'm going to test out. Cool. So, Ashley, if you could go back and share the crown jewel of wisdom with yourself, let's say like at 18 years old, right when you're graduating high school, what would that be?
You know, the one thing, and I'm still working on this because I still struggle with this, is I've always had like this deep desire for achievement. And so I'm always sort of in a hurry to get things done and move on to the next thing, and always sort of thinking ahead, which is good because I'm sort of this future-oriented person. I'm thinking ahead. I take long-term view on things. But at the same time, I'm always like, get it done yesterday. And I feel like I've spent a lot of my present moment has been frittered away because I'm so focused on the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And so I guess the piece of wisdom that I would share with my 18-year-old self was to just have a little bit more patience and enjoy the present moment a little bit more without being so concerned about, you know, how I'm going to get from where I am to where I want to go and what I'm going to do next.
Yeah, it's great advice. I think John Rockefeller used to give out that same advice to people around him to take it easy. You don't be in such a rush, you know, stay in the moment more. He used to take a nap every day after lunch, every day after dinner. I think he was quoted for saying something of the effect of, it's amazing how much you can get done if you just take your time.
Yeah, it's true. And deep down, I believe it, and I still struggle with, like, actually putting it into practice.
I'm sure there's quite a few of us nodding our heads right now in agreement. Cool. So we are at the place where if you'd like to make an ask of the audience or share some contact info, maybe send listeners to a website, now's the time.
Sure. Sure. So if you go to truenorthra.com, there you can find contact information. And one of the things that we do as a one-off for your clients, they don't have to be a client of True North to do this, we can prepare business continuity plans. So if you have listeners who really want to sit down, take inventory of what they have, and make sure that things will continue to run smoothly if something happens to them, they can reach me and get a hold of me, and we can put one of those together, independent of the business exit planning process. If they just want to do that piece of it, I'm happy to talk with anybody who's interested in putting that together and giving them a pretty thorough and comprehensive business continuity plan. So, you can find all of our contact information on our website, and it's truenorthra.com.
All right. Well, although I'm sure some of the people felt the morbidity of the moment as we were talking about our demise at some point, I feel like we talked about a whole lot of really important stuff that should be done sooner rather than later. I appreciate you taking this time, blocking out the distractions, Ashley, and sharing so much wisdom with us here on the REI Diamond Show. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Dan. This was a lot of fun.
And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Next up, we have Chris Prefontaine joining us, son of past REI Diamonds guest. Chris and I discussed terms deals, that is, getting into deals with little to no equity, with little to no money out of pocket. I mean, that sounds good, but how do you make these deals work? How do you make money on these deals, right? That's where Chris and I focus the bulk of our discussion, which is how to position to, market to, and make the deal work for the buyers who eventually take you out of these terms deals and allow you to reap your reward. P.S. The reward is your profit. Make sure you tune in next time if you're interested in learning how to make these deals work. Now, are you interested in a pre-release of the next episode before the email goes out? Subscribe on YouTube or one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, and you'll receive an advance notification as soon as episodes are published, as opposed to Saturday when I send out the email. If you prefer the email, just head on over to reidiamonds.com and sign up. It's a cool bonus there if you do. Attention deal makers, I am buying. I buy houses and apartment complex deals in Atlanta, Chicago, Philadelphia, and Florida. As the founder and president of Diamond Equity Investments, I look at every single deal, all 200-plus deals per year that we close, and make those decisions. So if you have a deal and you want me to take a look at that deal personally, you can contact me directly using the form at reidiamonds.com. Are you an accredited investor interested in short-term passive mortgage investment opportunities with double-digit returns? Head over to fundrehabdeals.com to check out available high-yield investment opportunities. That's the conclusion of this episode. Thank you again for tuning in to the REI Diamond Show. Dan Breslin here, signing off.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.